Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
What is your favorite or the best play on words using your last name that you've heard?
That ball got Schmidt on.
Oh! On 95.7 The Game.
All the disastrous pitching and defense is kind of taken away from the Giants' offense. Is actually kind of putting some runs on the board lately. 6 runs in Toronto 2 days ago. 5 runs yesterday.
Yeah.
No wins.
No.
Because now
no.
They can't do anything else right.
Right.
Including pitch, including field, including any other aspect of the game.
Bullpen, whatever. And I wonder about my beloved partner, not my current partner, who, I mean, we're twinning today. If you're on YouTube, you can see that Grandy and I are... Don't shake your head, Lucas. You're just jealous. You're jealous that Grandy and I have
Lucas
gotten closer.
Lucas is definitely jealous.
You're jealous that Granny and I have now gotten closer than you and he in 3 years. He and I have been doing this now for, what is this, show 5 or 6 or 7? Because we did Vegas. Actually, this is probably show 7. Since we, and I know you didn't do the show, but you and I were there together in Vegas. And in 7 days, you and I have gotten closer than you and Lucas in 3.5 years. Scoreboard. Yeah.
Congrats, Div.
You're so jelly. I'll get you one of these neat little green shirts, and we can be like...
You might have one.
No, I actually gave mine to you, Grandy. That is from our Warriors Summit,
yeah.
I don't know, a year and a half ago, back at Brewing.
If there was an extra, I said, grab me one, and you just ultimately gave me yours, and I was very appreciative.
You're it's welcome. Great. Yeah.
I gave you my Warriors All-Star quarter zip. You remember
How about
that?
Those Giants?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. I mean, we can go triplets, and I'm... Quick story, quick aside, oh, in honor God. Of Mark Willard, Petaluma Plaza, my first Little League team, I was 9, I actually was on a team with triplets, Dwayne, Wayne, and Blaine. All 3, shaved head, you couldn't tell them apart.
Wait, I'm sorry, how is this in honor of Mark Willard?
It's in honor of, it's a quick aside.
My quick asides
are actually quick asides.
I will make sure that it is a quick aside, because let's get back to the Giants. How about that?
Whatever.
Yep.
Most embarrassing play moment, whatever you want to say, Dibs, from last night.
Go ahead, Grandy.
Was it Birdsong not being able to get a single out?
No.
Was it the Giants allowing Acuna to score from first on a ground ball single?
Maybe.
Was it Ramos airmailing Adames on a throw from shallow left from like 20 feet away?
You're getting warmer.
Or was it Jung-Hoo Lee and Elliot Ramos letting a lazy fly ball drop in medium deep left center when they were both right there and either of them could have made the catch?
It was the third of those four. It was Elliot Ramos coming over and a garden variety, like, no one's going anywhere. I have the ball. Let me throw it to you, Willie, and then you can throw it to the pitcher, and then the pitcher can do one of those, like, I don't want this ball, and then the ump calls time, and then we throw it to the ball boy in the dugout, and we get a fresh pearl, and we go about our business. But instead, Elliot Ramos just inexplicably throws it over his head, and it was so far over his head that Adames didn't even jump. He, like, threw the purple glove up, almost as if to say, what the absolute F was that? And
it's a great question, Willie.
And nobody was backing it up, because why would you?
Yeah, Schmidt's where he's supposed to be on second base, because there's a runner on second base. And then you don't expect your outfielder, your major league outfielder, is going to somehow miss Adames, who's, I mean, couldn't be more than 25 feet away from each other.
30 tops. And it's literally like when you have in football... You've got a quarterback who gets the snap, and it's going to be one of those quick screens, and he just throws it into the fourth row. It's like, what? Like, he's open. It's a snap and throw play, and you go ahead and throw that into the eighth row. And, you know, Adames was like, what?
Yeah.
And even the base runners, they saw it, and they're like, oh, I guess it's incumbent upon us to take an extra base because, I mean, who could have seen that coming, right? And they did. And so that, to me, was the most embarrassing. And you had, you know, Ramos had a play in left where it was a tough play. He was on the run. He got the glove to it. Didn't catch it.
Tipped off the fingertips.
Yep. And so, I mean, the left field experience is a wild one right now. And so of all the things that are wrong, and we can all look at Rafi Devers and the contract, and you should be better. Okay, sure. But for me, it's pitching and defense.
Absolutely. Let's run through a couple of them. We don't have the highlight of that crazy Acuna or the crazy Ramos throw because it was just such an innocuous. It caught everybody off guard. But we do have the NBC Sports Bay Area call of some of these other ones, including in the bottom of the fourth inning, Ronald Acuna scoring from first on a single. In a single that was just a ground ball to the right of second base, past the dive of second baseman Casey Schmidt. Here is that play and how it sounded, courtesy of NBC Sports Bay Area.
Baldwin on the ground, and it's going to get through. So that'll score a run, and Acuna's going to come home. The throw, the tag, he is safe. Acuna just kept going. And he caught the Giants flat-footed. It's 7-2 Atlanta.
I mean, how the hell does that happen, Dibs? Acuna wasn't moving on the pitch. He was not stealing second. He's on first, and he's one of the best, if not the best, base runner in baseball. He's amazing. Even coming off of two ACL tears, he's still electric on the base paths. A normal single up the middle. How does a runner on first score? The answer, Jung-Hoo Lee, lackadaisical, and the cutoff man somehow standing at second base instead of being in shallow right center where the throw is more a direct path towards home plate. Giants just not attention to detail at all in that moment.
It's sloppy, and this is where I don't want to overtly side with Guru about Pat Burrell and the hitting coach, and if they don't hit, then it's the hitting coach, but I look at the skipper in this, and yep. It's Bob Melvin, and ultimately, if you have an NFL team and you've got a sloppy game, and you know Kyle Shanahan steps forward and says, yeah, that's on me, bad play calls, and I have to get them ready, and one thing about Steve Kerr is he's really good at this, where if the Warriors have a sloppy game, he will come out right away on the podium and say, you know what, that's on me, I didn't get them ready to play, even though it probably isn't on him. If the Warriors have 23 turnovers and they lose, Steve Kerr a lot of time will take the blame, even though it's not his fault. And I'm not saying that Bob Melvin needs to do this, but I'm looking at a game like yesterday, and where are we with the overall management of this team? You've got defensive lapses, and I get it. Ramos is not going to catch every tough play in left, and he's been more of an adventure than you would want. And the Jung-Hoo Lee, Elliot Ramos play, like, you get it, I take it, I
you
take it.
You want to hear it?
I would love to,
Let's
Randy.
Hear it. Here
Let's
it is. It. Bottom of the sixth inning.
That's going to stay in the park. Ramos. No! Nobody catches it. And Acuna will score. Oh, my goodness. What is going on?
That's Flam on NBC.
No!
NBC Sports Bay Area. Yeah, that's how all of us reacted too. You can't possibly let that happen. Like,
you
what are we doing?
Me. Right. And again, I don't want to say like, well, I mean, that's Bob Melvin. He needs to have them more buttoned up. But how long does this go on before you start to look at who's to blame? Because these are Major League Baseball players. These are grown adults who've been playing baseball for a long time. Long time. So is it up to the manager to say, hey guys, when there's a fly ball between the two of you, one of you needs to catch it, okay? Cool. I'm the manager, and I just told you how to do that. So it's not as easy as, well, Bob Melvin, you got to get that buttoned up. But I look at the overall sloppiness of this team. And, you know, we were watching the game yesterday, and the Braves actually, they gave up multiple outs on the base paths where...
Yeah, it's not like the Braves played a clean game either.
Right. There was an overthrow at first, and, you know, the Braves runner went to second, and he was out by 15 feet, but it didn't matter because...
And that play where Devers scored, the left fielder ducked out of the way of the ball.
Exactly. Exactly. Good point. So,
yeah, like...
I mean, there was slop on both sides, but their slop was less offensive, and they were able to win the game.
Way less offensive. Way, way, way less offensive. And this is coming on the heels, Dibs, of... The Giants not playing like an utterly offensive series in Toronto, but like some of these similar things cropping up there as well. Ramos entirely misreading a ball off the bat, a liner to left. He comes racing in. The ball sails over his head. Two runs score. And I don't mean to say this is not me reporting anything. This is not me saying that there is discord in the clubhouse. But things like that, Dibs, when you have mistakes, mental mistakes like that by your players, and you have consistent non-errors that are costing your pitchers runs, that sometimes is what like pushes people the wrong way. And you get pitchers that are upset. I can't imagine Ryan Walker is feeling good about himself after what happened in the outfield. I can't imagine Robbie Ray is excited about the way Elliot Ramos read that ball off the bat. Not saying it's happening, but if there was ever a reason for there to be some butting of heads in the clubhouse, it's things like that. Like that, that can lead to something bigger.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the Logan Webb start, which I guess would have been, was that Monday or... No, that would have been...
Logan Webb started Saturday.
Right, and there was a ball that went to left field, and Elliot Ramos kind of overran it.
Yeah.
He cut in front of it, and it went over his head, and you cut back to Logan Webb, and it wasn't a total, like, two hands up Iguodala, but it was a little sense of, like, he looked back, and I was kind of looking at him like, yeah, like...
You kidding me?
Right, that went over your head?
Yeah.
Like, so I do think that some of that starts to percolate, especially when you... Talk about starting pitchers, Robbie and Logan, who've like held it down all year.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I think Bob Melvin's got to field some of the blame for this, and we can get into that. What do you think? 888-957-9570. What is the blame here for Bob Melvin? Does Buster Posey get any? Is it as simple as the Giants players got to play better? Something's wrong, and who's to blame? Let's figure that out. Plus, we got time for your calls. Travis, I see you. Jonathan, I see you. We'll get to you when we come back. Plus, tickets to Saturday's Giants-Mets game. That's coming up later today. Just keep listening. We will begin at 4:30 and tell you how you can win. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you right here on 95.7 The Game.
That's going to stay in the park. Ramos, no! Nobody catches it. And Acuna will score. Oh, my goodness. What is going on? No! No! No!
Not ideal.
No!
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
That's Dave Fleming on NBC Sports Bay Area with some creative producing behind the glass by Lucas Alexander.
It
almost sounded like Dave Fleming screaming no was just him letting out his fandom for a sec as opposed to him describing the action because he was just so taken aback by it. He was not telling us that it did not get caught. He was just telling us, no, that can't happen.
Right? No!
Are you kidding me? No!
No!
Exactly. I mean, how? How was that happening after everything that they went through in the first inning and yet you continue to have these level of mistakes? And, you know, you can try to blame a person or two people or whoever you want to blame. Bottom line is this team right now is in, it's more than a funk. It's an F you something else, K.
Whoa.
It's a fact.
No!
I won't do it, Dave, because I want to keep my job.
You said F-A something else K.
F you something else K.
Yeah, so how would it be? Whatever.
No!
You know what it is, Grandy.
Not going any further.
Yeah, it's
I would say it's F-U-N-K. A free fall. They're in a free fall.
Right. I mean, whatever they're in, it is bad. And the pitching, bad. The defense, bad. The hitting, I mean, the hitting, whatever. Okay, you're down 7-0. Go ahead and hit, guys. Go
crazy. They scored a run in the first. They gave their pitcher a lead.
They did.
And then it was gone very quickly.
Gone. Yeah, because he got nobody out.
Nobody out.
Yeah, you need 27 outs in the game, and he got zero of the 27.
Walk, double walk, hit by pitch.
Right.
That was Birdsong's day.
And that's it.
That's it.
And it's not like, you know, Bryson DeChambeau opening up the Open Championship with a 77 and then going on to be 16 under the rest of the way, and you wind up top 10. Like, Birdsong didn't have that chance. He opened up with an 87, and he was a withdrawal.
He didn't finish the round.
Exactly. Exactly. He got the hook.
Yeah, he retired on the fifth hole.
Right. The caddy came out, and he's like, I'm going to need that golf ball from you. Wait, yeah? Okay, yeah, you're gone.
Okay.
It's over.
And you're also getting demoted. You're not playing on the top level of the tour anymore.
The Corn Fairy. So now he's going to play the Corn Fairy. Yeah, the Corn Fairy, yeah, which is the AAA version. But
that's what happened to Hayden Birdsong yesterday, and we're talking through it. Whether you want to react to all the embarrassing moments that happened, if you want to lay blame at the feet of Bob Melvin or whoever, We're here for it. 888-957-9570. Travis is up next. Travis, what's up? You're on with Dibs and Grandy. How you doing, Travis?
I'm great. Long-time listener, first-time caller, so really appreciate you guys taking the call.
No problem, man.
I wanted to throw two things at you guys. So first thing is, I feel like the Giants are in an identity crisis right now. Like 2010, 2012, 2014, we knew this team could pitch, and we would be timely hitting, and we would just grind out games. We would just, that was our identity. This first 50 games, it felt like we were gearing towards that same identity. We were going to grind you 3-2, 5-1, 2-1 sometimes. Everybody knew their role. We would have good starting pitching, good bullpen, and we would sweat out the closer because, I mean, that's just what we do. And so now I feel like we're playing bad defense. We're trying to out-hit people. We can't pitch. And I feel like we lost that identity in this last 50 games. We don't even know what team we are. And I feel like that kind of goes with the manager. Like, that's on him. Like, he should understand what we're trying to do as a team. I'm not even sure as a fan. Are we bunting him over with a guy on second, less than, like, one out? Are we bunting him over third? Are we trying to hit him in? Like, I don't even know our identity anymore. So that's one. The second thing is, I feel like that caller that called before me, he definitely called the show before. So I just wanted to give Dibs his due. Like, that guy definitely called before. And just really appreciate you guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Travis.
Thank you, Travis. Yeah. And, you know,
good job, Dibs. Good ears.
Well, thank you. First time caller from Travis. And, you know, you start to like drill down on not only the voices, but also like the talking points. Mm. And when somebody is that aggressively going after Buster, it definitely raises my ears a little bit because, yes, I mean, Buster and everyone, you're open to criticism. But I think about where they are right now. You're still above 500. You're still in the mix. The season's not over. You're not the Rockies. You're not the White Sox. You're not a lot of these other teams. It's bad right now, but I think about what Buster has done heading into the trade deadline, and he made a big move. Whether or not you think that Rafi Devers is going to help now, later, or ever, he did that. He did that damn thing. He made a move for a big-time proven bat. That was a bold move. So for me, I'm willing to let it actually marinate and see if that actually can be something that works out over the course of this year, next year, and years going forward. My problem right now is more, and I don't want to put this at the feet of Bob Melvin, but when you're the manager and you've lost six in a row and your team is sloptastic, that's got to fall on someone's doorstep. And right now, the way you're playing sloppy baseball. And when you're a team that doesn't put up more than, I think, 4.1 runs a game, when you're a team that needs to win 4-3, you can't afford to slop it up.
I think it's even worse than sloppy. It's just like, I don't know where the passion is. I don't know where the desire to avoid this kind of embarrassing display is. Like, it feels like they're resigned to the fact that their season has suddenly taken a downturn. Like the way that you see Jung-Hoo Lee try to catch a fly ball in left center after he allows Acuna to score from first on a single, that's when you lock in further. That's when your manager takes you aside in the dugout between innings and says, hey, Jung-Hoo, you can't do that. Whether it's on Adames or Schmidt, make sure you get to the right spot in the cutout. You pull those guys together and you say, we can't be having that stuff. We're struggling. We can't pitch right now. We can't hit consistently right now. We have to be perfect in those little moments. I don't know if it's like it's not unloading on a guy. These are professionals and these are grown men that have families. I don't think that is how professionals react in the best way. Now, generally, people are different, but the way that you handle, say, a college team is entirely different than how you handle a professional team. So it's not as if I'm taking Jung-Hoo Lee or Ramos or anybody aside and I'm just absolutely unloading the clip on them, but there has to be some sort of accountability, and that comes from the coaching staff and specifically the manager. You have to take somebody aside and say, Jung-Hoo, we can't have that under any means necessary. And he follows that up by what happened in deep left center field in the sixth inning when he's there with 3 seconds to spare and the ball drops right in front of him, that is absolutely unacceptable. And a physical error is one thing. Not hitting the ball is one thing. Struggling just in the normal baseball things, that happens. It's a long season. But mental mistake after mental mistake that showing, you know, lethargy and lack of passion. No, I'm sorry. That comes from the manager, and the manager has to set that tone. And Bob Melvin has failed to do that so far.
And I wonder if it is those things, lethargy and lack of passion, more than it is just Jung-Hoo Lee, who is, and I'm going to borrow from Joe Namath right now and say he is struggling. And when you struggle at the plate and you bring it to the field, or you struggle in the field and you bring it to the plate, that's where it becomes a real issue. And that's what I see from Jung-Hoo Lee right now. And remember, he's barely one full year into his major league career, because last year he played about, 6 weeks? And then he got hurt. He was gone for the year. And so this year is his first full year.
Has he played 160 total? Let's see.
He's played just about that.
133.
There you go. And so that's not a ton of games. And yeah. You know, that's about a full year, honestly, if you consider that guys don't play every game.
560 plate appearances. That's around a year's worth.
Right.
Yeah, he's close.
Fair. So he's right through his, quote, rookie year. I know he played in the KBL, so that actually counts to where you're a pro and you should know better. But I just look at what he is doing, and it looks like he's carrying his defensive struggles to the plate, and more so his plate struggles to defense, where defensively he's always been very, very good out in center. And right now, you know, he looks a little bit tentative, and the whole defense right now, they look shaky, and that's not great for a team that prides itself on pitching and defense.
Yeah, and you go and ask anybody, and maybe not anybody, but like the veteran leaders of this team and the clubhouse, and I think specifically of someone like Matt Chapman. I know Willy Adames feels this way. And a lot of the others, you go and ask them about Bob Melvin, and they will go to bat. They say they absolutely love Bob Melvin, and that's not that surprising. Bob has always tended to be a player's manager. I know it did not go well for him in San Diego. That felt like he just had a difference in opinion with a number or a couple of the really key guys in San Diego, namely Tatis and Machado. I don't think he was just universally hated there, but they definitely butted heads. But I think most, if not like the vast, vast, vast majority of the players that he managed in Oakland would say the same thing, the way that a lot of these Giants fans or players feel. But I don't care if you're a player's manager and if everybody loves you in that clubhouse. If this is how you play as a result of that, then you have to change something. You just cannot keep doing the same thing. The 650 on the Boxer and Gersten work injury attorneys text line. They look completely checked out, and that's on Bob. Fair or not, it's like the criticism that Steve Kerr gets every single game for not playing somebody who struggles, and the idea that someone who's on the bench is going to play well when they weren't given the chance, when the reality is we do not know what's possible. When you are the leader of an organization and your team is putting out an embarrassing performance, whether or not you have any tangible way to affect that, like you're not in center field and telling Jung-Hoo how to handle the specific play, whether or not that's on you physically or for whatever reason, you're the manager. It falls at your feet. You have to answer for this mess.
No doubt. And it's the same thing in any business. If you have a restaurant and you are the manager of the restaurant and sales are down by 20 or 30%, and you know, you could go to the chef and say, well, the chef's not making very good food. And you go to the wait staff and you could say, well, the wait staff is not very good at getting to the table and getting the food out. And, you know, the food runners are bad and the dishwashers are sending out dirty dishes and the busboy this and the maitre d' that. And you could look at all the rest of it, but ultimately it falls at your doorstep at some point. And right now the Giants, I don't think, are at a point where you're looking at Bob Melvin and saying, okay, Bob, you know, you got a series or two, or else, you know, we're going to have to make a real hard change. I look at the overall product right now, and are they lethargic? Maybe. Are they sloppy? Certainly.
Absolutely.
Are they underachieving?
Yes.
Absolutely. So as a manager, it's up to you to now try to push different buttons. And I think about our station here and our boss who has been here now, what, 7 years? And, you know, when things here in our station are not where he wants them to be, he will push different buttons, whether it's additional show meetings or, you know, shaking somebody up or, you know, getting a new guest or whatever it is.
We've all been on the receiving end of those a couple of times.
Many times. At least many times. And so, you know, it's not always comfortable, but at least from a management standpoint, he's trying to do what he can to shake up the group. And, you know, I've coached high school to probably 20 or 25 seasons, and you've got years where things are going bad. And I used the analogy earlier where I tried to shake up a team one time and my senior leaders came to me and they're like, no, that's not, you know, that's not us. Like, that doesn't work for us. And so as a coach, I actually learned a lesson that, you know, every team is different. So maybe this team is not a team that will respond to you flipping the spread or Buster coming downstairs and, like, you know, going off on somebody. Every team is different, but somehow, some way, you have to reach this team. You have to reach Elliot Ramos and Jung-Hoo Lee and Rafi Devers and Hayden Birdsong. I mean, you can now reach him in the 916, but you get the point where it's like you need to find a way to, I don't know if it's a players-only meeting or a closed-door meeting or whatever it is, but six in a row, including a bad sweep in Toronto and now Atlanta cuffing you around, you got to find a way to snap out of this now.
Yeah, I think most baseball fans, and I think I am this way, when you hear, like, all right, the manager's got to light a fire, and we all just immediately think, it's like, okay, like, flip a spread, right? Like, that's the way that we think it happens. I don't know how much that happens in today's baseball. I don't think really much at all. But there are other ways to reach a team, and it is Bob's job to find the way to reach this team. And given the way that they're playing, it doesn't really feel like he's found that way. So until he does find that way, I can't look at him and tell him, honestly, I think that he's doing an awesome job because the team is playing the way that they're playing, and that ultimately comes down to the manager. What do you think? 888-957-9570. Is it just simply players got to play better? Or does Bob Melvin deserve a chunk of the blame for the way that this Giants team has been playing of late? Let's go to Jonathan in San Jose, who joins us next. Jonathan, you're on with Dibs and Grandy. What's up?
Hey, Grandy and Dibs. It's been a minute, about a whole 24 hours, huh, Dibsy?
Yeah, I missed you.
Yeah, time goes by so slowly when you're off air. Anyways, I wanted to just give this two words, and I know you gentlemen will agree with me. This smells like a desperation sensation, boys. And what I mean by that is putting Rafi at first. Now, I get it's not the most craziest thing, but it is a little ironic due to everything, you know, that we have heard in Boston, et cetera, et cetera. Not to mention, they almost put out, there you go. They put out that, you know, he's not comfortable there. Anyways, I don't need to explain the obvious, and I know you guys see that too, but I mean, boys, I'm not liking it. Something stinks, and I think it's the Giants right now, guys. And again, another one I wanted to actually hit on was Jung-Hoo Lee. I don't think we've had enough time to give him a proper analyzation to when we, you know, and I don't mean now, I mean the whole hype, and I hate to use that word because when he's on fire, the kid's a great ball player. But again, we haven't had that full time, and I think, again, in the Bay Area, we tend to do this. We jump the gun a little bit, and we get a little ahead of ourselves. Again, at the end of the day, I don't like where we're at, but I like the team that we're working with, and I think once things kind of fall in place, you know, we may not want to hear about, you know, not possibly getting there this season, but the future could still look bright, no? Anyway, boys, you guys have a great afternoon, and let's go Giants.
Yep.
Thanks, right. Jonathan.
I mean, the whole thing about Jung-Hoo Lee and the sample, and I'm looking at his last 60 games, he's hitting 60 games, Grandy. That's almost a half a year.
Yep.
He's hitting .210 with an OPS of .613, and he's got two home runs, and he's driven in 18.
What's crazy is the last 15 games are actually pretty good. So the previous 45 were, like, absolutely terrible.
Right, and let me look at the last 15.
He's been better in July, a lot better in July.
He has, and I'm looking at, you know, June 30th, he was hitting .240, and now he's hitting .249. So I mean, it's been better, to your point about, like, you know, what it was before that. And that's dramatic. Where,
yeah.
And he's a guy where he plays every day. And this is the thing we all wanted. And I wanted this, and Willard, and, you know, when Bob Melvin took over and you had Buster Posey come in, it's like, you know what? We're going to have these guys, and they're going to play every day. And it's going to be Chapman and Adamas. It's going to be Devers and Bailey. It's going to be Jung Hoo Lee and Elliot Ramos. And then maybe the other three will pick and pop. I know Casey Schmidt's been playing a ton.
Yeah.
And, you know, Yaz Platoon and whatnot. And so this is what we all wanted. But when you want this, you've got to have guys who actually do better than that. You mentioned Jung Hoo Lee in July, 296 yeah. batting average.
Much better.
OPS is 754, which is solid, rock solid. No home runs, seven runs batted in. No stolen bases. And that's something that we were, you know, expecting him to be yeah. more of a threat on the base paths. And so maybe we can add that to the mix, where the team right now is not pitching, they're not fielding, and they don't run. And put aside Rafi Devers and, like, oh, how painful it is to watch him try to run the bases. Reminds me of me playing adult softball 4 years ago when I could not go from first to third. I just can't. I'm in my 50s. He's not. But they don't run very well either.
No. They don't do a lot of things very well.
They don't bunt. They don't situational hit. They don't hit home runs. They don't hit with runners in scoring position. They don't pitch, and they don't field. So
how do you win baseball games if that's who you are?
You have an ace get you a lead 2-1, and then you have an unbelievable bullpen hold it down. You know, whether it's Rogers, Rodriguez, and Doval, or, you know, Walker in there as well. That's the only way that you really win games right
that's
now.
That's a pretty thin window to shoot for.
Yeah.
Like, you have to thread a needle in order to win baseball games where they're playing right now.
It's a little Shanahanian, and I'll get into the Kyle Shanahan blueprint later in the program, but the Shanahan blueprint is not unlike that, where he needs to have the lead in the third quarter or they don't win. They just don't. Like, Shanahan doesn't come from behind, and this no. Giants team, if you're down, you know, 4-1, other than the Patrick Bailey, you know, walk off inside the park 3-run piece, it's hard for you to come back in these games.
Talking about Bob Melvin and some of the blame that he deserves on the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorneys text line, we have some varying opinions. The 925 agreeing that Bob Melvin deserves blame. A different 925 calls it high school level excuse making. The players have to play better, and I see both sides. Let me ask you this. Do you think Buster Posey, I mean, not Buster Posey on a hot seat, not Buster Posey the wrong guy for the job, but, I mean, his additions to this team, Devers has really struggled, Adamas better lately, but most people would say a disappointment so far, and Verlander is a big question mark as well. The moves that Posey have made so far haven't really helped the team win a lot of baseball games.
No, I would say Adamas is a win, and if you want to look at his WAR, wins over replacement, he's a 1.1 positive WAR player, and a lot of that it's based on his past now more than 7 weeks.
Yep.
It's coming up on 8 weeks of he's been really good. He's been as good as you would expect him to be. He leads the team in home runs, and he's second in RBI behind.
Hit another home run yesterday.
Right. I think that Willy Adamas now is off of my list of, well, I mean, Buster. Devers, it's still very, very early for Devers, but the Verlander one, and it wasn't a big contract. It was not a long-term contract, but you wanted him to come in and be better than this, so I would give Buster a win, a loss, and a draw. And the draw right now is still Devers.
I think that's fair.
The jury's out.
Yeah, I think that's
but
fair.
But Verlander is a flat-out miss.
I wonder who else I could have spent that money on if there was any other realistic option. Maybe we could go back and look at some of the other pitchers that signed for a similar amount. But that definitely has not turned out good for the Giants. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll get into more of this. I think what I want to ask everybody, and we were just talking about it a little bit ago, 888-957-9570, what exactly are the Giants good at? What can they hang their hat on? Because of late, they're not good at anything. Maybe other than a bullpen when they're in the right position. But if you need middle relief, I mean, they can't do that either. What is this Giants team good at? We can get into that. We'll take your calls and your texts. 888-957-9570. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs.